the Antoinette system and tune in to the Pearl White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 31st of January 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at RadioArian.com because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us today. Matt, how are you doing today? I hear you're a little bit cold where you are.
It got down to minus 15 Fahrenheit last night. A pipe burst in my house. I backed over some guy's garage, garbage can on the way to the store this morning, and I dragged it all the way there. And then I get home, I put on CNN for 5 seconds, and I hear the claim that Aramco, the Saudi, so-called national oil company, is owned by the Saudi government. And I'm, as always, yelling, you know, impotently at the screen. Aramco is run entirely by either Americans, Englishmen, or Americanized Arabs. And they're doing this to, you know, if oil prices go up or whatever, they get to blame the Arabs. You know, the so-called Saudis on there. Mohammed Tarawi graduated the Air Force Academy in Colorado. Mohammed Al-Jadan is at Morgan Stanley in the IMF. Ibrahim Al-Assaf, it's from the University of Denver. And the chairman of the board, Khalid Al-Fatah, went to Texas A&M. So not exactly representative of the Saudi population. And it just pisses me off that such ridiculous errors are said by a major name on a major news broadcast for that purpose. So you know what? I've been better, Sven. I've been better.
Well, don't the Saudis have to sell all their oil for dollars anyway? So obviously it's controlled by America. I mean, the dollars that they pay for the oil can only be spent in America on American goods. So whatever the relationship is, it's a primary benefit to America. But I was just asking you that. I was just wondering, Matt, you are entirely funded by listeners' donations, aren't you? Am I correct in thinking that?
This is really important. I'm completely independent. I don't listen to anybody, including my own conscience half the time, because my reader and listener donations keep me in business. That is it. And without them, I have nothing. So when a pipe bursts in my basement and floods it, you know, I'm hoping some listeners are more generous than others.
Yeah, We don't often mention it, do we? We don't often mention it that we do require on donations, and you in particular. And there are quite a few different ways that you can donate to Dr. Johnson. I think that there's a link on the Orthodox Nationalist page. There's also a link at Rust Journal. I think you've also got Patreon. So there's plenty of ways that people can donate. And now would be a good time to donate to him if any of you listeners can. Well, what have we got for today, Matt? We've got Donald Trump and the deep state that we're going to be talking about. You sent me a few newspaper articles here, and we're going to be talking about this because the U.S. intelligence chief has just been testifying before the Senate, and apparently he has painted a dire picture of a danger-filled world to them, contradicting the Trump administration's optimism on North Korea and his pessimism on Iran, while also beating the drums of Russiagate. Testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday, Director of National Intelligence Coates argued that China and Russia are united in opposition to perceived U.S. unilateralism and interventionism and Western promotion of democratic values and human rights, while a number of US allies are seeking greater independence. I like the way they just say it's just perceived US unilateralism and interventionism. America wasn't really intervening in Syria and Libya and now Venezuela. It's just perceived. He was joined by FBI Director Christopher Wray, CIA Director Gina Haspel, Defense Intelligence Agency Chief General Robert Ashley, NSA Chief General Paul Nakasone, and National Geospatial Intelligence Agency Director Robert Cardillo. So the whole of the deep state were there. The DNI's prepared remarks ran counter to many Trump administration talking points, in particular on the issues of North Korea and Iran, while mirroring the obsession of some Republicans with China and most Democrats with Russia. North Korea is unlikely to surrender its nuclear weapons, while Iran is not currently undertaking the key nuclear weapons development activity several Trump administration officials have accused it of, Coates said. Coates told a different story on Tuesday. We continue to assess that North Korea is unlikely to give up all of its nuclear weapons and production capabilities, even as it seeks to negotiate partial denuclearization steps to obtain key US and international concessions, his prepared remarks argued. North Korean leaders view nuclear arms as critical to the regime's survival, Coates continued, and we continue to observe activity inconsistent with full denuclearization. So he's totally going against everything that Donald Trump says there. He's got all the rest of the deep state lined up with him, going along with this. And I mean, it's a major part of what Donald Trump is doing. He's trying to make peace with North Korea, and whether we like it or not, it also this breaking this deal with Iran. I think this is the first time we've ever seen such a contradiction between the leader of a country and the intelligence agencies of that country. Matt, what do you think of this, and also particularly the North Korea bits?
The election of Trump led to a very much, I think, similar to the election of Nixon, led to a revolt of the elites in D.C. He wasn't supposed to win. He didn't take money from anybody. He's not going to be beholden to them. He's not one of them. And this is the first time these people are downplaying the Iranian threat. That wasn't the case just a few months ago. If Donald Trump says it, they're going to contradict it. Since Trump was elected, the intelligence communities have absolutely come together for one of the few times in their history is actually will cooperate and make war on the president. A coup of some kind is being planned. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. And the very crude manipulation of the population, which I guess will work, stuff like Russiagate and you know, the Saudi thing and all this. You know, it's not just for irritation that I bring up the Saudi issue. It just shows you that Middle Eastern oil is controlled by the West. However, there are some oil producers, the biggest ones, in fact, Venezuela, and a bit down the list, Russia, and Iran, are not controlled by the West and are not using dollars, and they're in a lot of trouble. And that's the issue here. So to the extent that these men, the bureaucrats working at the FBI and the CIA, have ties in these industries. They are elites, not just in intelligence, but in economics and in finance and everything else. It's a revolving door from one office to another, from private sector to public sector and back to private sector again. It's one Bohemian Grove kind of club. And Trump's not one of them. Nixon wasn't one of them. You know, but Hillary would be, you know, Bob Dole would be, Bill Clinton is. So, you know, that's really the issue here. And they're going to destroy him. And rather than getting better, the attacks on Trump, even now just from comedians, from late night shows, TV shows, sometimes out of nowhere, they'll just say something nasty about Trump. It's not even funny. It's not meant to be funny. They'll even break character to say that it's a barrage that I have never seen against somebody. And he wants to purge this deep state. I think, as you probably know, Obama purged the American military, the upper brass, of a lot of people who he considered to be disloyal, several hundred, in fact, for no good reason. You know, there's been a purge from the left of the military intelligence for a long time. And I think now that that's just beginning to, you know, to show itself here. Trump is very much all alone.
Well, they were, I remember they were very much against Iran. So it has been a complete about turn there. And with this North Korea thing, I think they hated it that he made peace with Kim Jong-un and went over for, that summit in Singapore. They were absolutely furious about that. I think he's got another summit coming up soon. Hopefully he will prove them wrong once again. What about Iran? Continuing here, though the Trump administration has been beating the drums of war with Iran ever since exiting the JCPOA nuclear deal last May, Coates and the spy chiefs told the senators that Tehran has remained party to the deal and has not reactivated its nuclear program. We do not believe Iran is currently undertaking the key activities we judge necessary to produce a nuclear device, Coates said in his prepared remarks. Nuclear research conducted by Iran since last year, Coates continued, has been done within the limits of the JCPOA. The DNI did express concern at Iran's traditional military capability, as well as its ongoing ballistic missile program and ambitions in Syria. But that didn't quite rise to the level of Trump's rhetoric at the UN last September, when he accused Tehran of sowing chaos, death and destruction across the Middle East. And what is it that Iran's actually involved in the Middle East? I think they're involved in Yemen, and they're involved in Syria, and they may ship arms to the Palestinians. But in each one of those cases, they've been invited in by those countries, by the people in that country. They've been invited there. They're not invading Israel, which is what seems to be the major fear about this. You never hear of Iran being responsible for jihadis blowing themselves up or anything like that. I don't really understand the problem that they have with Iran, to be honest, Matt. I mean, even the comments against Israel, we haven't heard any of them for about 10 years now. We haven't heard anti-Israel comments coming from Iran. So do you think this is the animosity towards Tehran is simply because of the oil? Because surely Iran wouldn't mind selling the oil to America if America would buy it. What is all this about?
Yeah, the U.S. gets very little of its oil from the Iranians, if any. It got a tiny amount from Iraq. Remember, and I did a whole broadcast on Iran on Radio Aryan last year. Keep in mind, it's a first world country now. Thanks to the religious leadership, it is a first world country. It's a first world educational system, 100% literacy, major urbanization, and one of the most powerful scientific establishments in the world, and has a banking system that doesn't use usury. Of course, the central bank is under the religious law. And the jihadi kind of, this kind of Muslim crusading comes from the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. And we already know the deep penetration of the United States and Israel in Saudi politics. The war in Yemen is against the pro-Iranian Houthi state. That's why the U.S. is involved. That's why the Saudis are involved. Syria, of course, has always been a ally of Iran. They sided with Iran during the Iraq War in the late 80s. And they have several militias, of course, fighting Israel. And Hezbollah won and defeated the South Lebanon Army just, 10 years ago. Maybe – I can't remember now, but maybe a decade ago, and took all of South Lebanon back. So it's a threat. You know, I said it before, but – threat to the U.S., that is to say, a threat to liberalism. These countries that the U.S. has dealt with, I mean, had Chavez and his people been able to run Venezuela longer, it would be also first world, as what happened in South Korea and Taiwan. You know, third world, first world in a short period of time. Syria, Libya, Iraq, these were all on the cusp of first world status. And this is something that not only Israel couldn't handle, but the West couldn't handle. And there's many layers to this, ideological and financial. These were all social nationalist governments. Every last one of them saw itself as both, you know, socialist in the very broad idealistic sense and firmly national. And they prove, of course, rapid economic growth and tremendous social consensus could be created, by, you know, non-liberal democratic systems. And that's really what this is about. And the economic, tremendous economic success of Iran over the last 15 years has been kept from the American population. Even specialized studies don't talk about it too much. You have to know, you have to go into other languages and hear it and realize this is a highly advanced first world society. It is not a third world country. And this is why it can mount a tremendous threat. And then not to mention all of the Shiites in Iraq. So they have the potential of regional growth. And they're allied with Russia and they're allied with China. I think one of the reasons that they're right about the nuclear issue is that, you know, they have Russian and Chinese protection in that respect. No one is going to nuke Iran. If they were ever threatened, the Chinese or the Russians or even the Pakistanis would supply them with whatever they need for their defense in that respect. So they're like South Korea in that regard. They don't really need it because other people will take care of it. So that's the issue as it stands with Iran. You know, it's a big secret in American politics. And of course, Johnson's law applies.
Well, Dr. E. Michael Jones refers to Iran as the leader of the free world because they had their Islamic revolution and they never had feminism there. So the men are free there from feminism. And he sees that as real freedom. And I bring that up because Saudi Arabia is supposedly against homosexuals, against women's freedom, against all these things that we see America pushing everywhere. But America doesn't push it in Saudi Arabia. And I find that very interesting because we see that the New World Order is pushing this degeneracy all over the world. And it does push it in Iran, but it doesn't in Saudi Arabia at all.
Well, there's at least one woman on Aramco's board, and Aramco has a number of high ranking female foreign, of course. They have, and Aramco has this big female empowerment thing going on, within the company, you know, all kinds of affirmative action. I think it's mostly for foreign women, but some local women too. But E. Michael Jones, as you know, I'm a huge fan of his. His work changed my life many years ago, and he's right. Shiite Islam is not, again, I'm not claiming to be an expert in it by any means, but it is nothing like the Islam that we're used to. They've been allied with Russia ever since the Yeltsin era. They refused to support the Chechen rebels, no matter how, you know, Islamic they pretended to be. They're insular in that respect. They're far more realistic in that regard. And they hate the image that people like the Wahhabists have given to Islam. They're a very different style of religion, very pro-Orthodox in the Christian sense, and very pro-Russian. And that's been the case for a long time. And again, that's another threat that the U.S. sees and has to be dealt with. What you just quoted here from that, what's his name? Intelligence talking head.
Coates.
Coates. The only issue there is he's just sticking it to Trump. Just the other day, they were condemning the Iranians, but Trump said something. And then, so now they have to say they're not so bad. That's really all it is. Just stick it to them. The North Korean thing, I don't know. No one knows what's happening there. It is completely cut off. We have no reliable sources of information. Remember that when it comes to North Korea, be very careful who you listen to. All these documentaries and all these books, these are mostly conjecture. I mean, even South Korean scholars familiar with the area, you know, even they don't have the insider information that they need to do a real analysis. No one really knows. The situation there. It's only conjecture. Sometimes you go to Chinese officials, maybe you get some, but everything is hearsay. Everything is secondhand. So be very, very careful what information you get about North Korea. They've done a very good job of keeping themselves insulated, and that's going to result in a far healthier population. But I agree with Jones. Of course, you know, I always thought that the Russians were the leaders of the free world, but the Iranians are right there with them, members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They're on the same team. And so he's absolutely right.
Well, they host historical revisionist conferences as well, and Lebanon do as well. So the Shiites do seem to be for free speech up to a limit, I guess. They don't allow Christian proselytizing, but they are still prepared to discuss things such as Holocaust revisionism. Well, China was also mentioned in this get-together in front of the Senate. Russia and China featured prominently in the DNI's report, particularly with regards to cybercrime. China presents a persistent cyber espionage threat and a growing attack threat to our core military and critical infrastructure systems, Coate argued, adding that China has the potential to use private tech companies to carry out espionage against the US and its allies. Coate's fear is shared by the Pentagon, which banned Huawei and ZTE phones from US military bases last year, and by other intelligence chiefs who accused the firms of spying on behalf of the Chinese government. Huawei has also been barred from participating in the US rollout of 5G networks, while Trump is reportedly considering barring US firms from using Huawei and ZTE equipment. And they also arrested the Huawei's CEO, didn't they, recently in Canada? They seem to be making a huge fuss about this company in particular, this Huawei company. When you think of all the collusion between Apple and the American government and the bugging of all the politicians' phones in Germany by America, it's a bit rich to be starting to get worried about this now. I mean, even in Britain, we've got Chinese and Japanese that were supposed to be building nuclear power stations for us, which they aren't now, of course. But it is crazy to have all these foreign companies designing all the technology that's being used in our countries. I mean, we're the ones that developed this technology in the first place. Why did we sell it to them? Because that's the capitalist model, I guess, that ignores all the work that went into it and all the generations before and all their knowledge that was put together to actually come out with these systems. And then because of our capitalist system, it just gets sold to Chinese and Japanese, and then it becomes it can be used as a weapon in their hands against us. What do you think of this, Matt, and about China and their private tech companies carrying out espionage against America?
Well, remember that the Chinese telecommunications industry is state-owned and state-controlled. I don't like using psychological arguments. I mean, you don't know what's going on inside somebody's head. It's a sure mark of an amateur when someone says, oh, he's just jealous, that's why he believes it. You know, you don't know that. But the evidence seems to be overwhelming. I mean, the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming that so many American elites are projecting their guilt and their hypocrisy onto everybody else. I mentioned that in my book on Vladimir Putin years ago. You know, he's the man that they wish they were, and they project all their worst qualities onto him. Every single thing that they accuse, they've been doing, that they advocate doing. But for something as specific as saying they're going to use private tech companies to do some nefarious thing, right at the same time, just last month, you had, Congressman Warner from Virginia, or Senator Warner from Virginia, saying that we need to update our laws in unison with the tech companies to stop the subversion of our democracy by the Russians and the Chinese. Now the Russiagate thing is being broadened. It's now the Chinese are involved, and the Iranians are involved, according to Warner, I guess, is one of these guys that's been the big promoter of it, of Russiagate from the beginning. And but that's a very specific thing to accuse someone else of, when in fact, you know, guys like Warner, I mean, they've been talking about this for a long time, tight controls over social media. There's got to be a certain psychological projection here where, again, you can't rely on it purely as a way to understand international politics, but it's just so overwhelming now that there's a certain guilt, there's a certain realization of their illegitimacy, and that simply they're projecting it onto governments and people who are far more popular than themselves, who are far more successful than themselves. I've been saying this when your headlines have been screaming the Russian economy is going to collapse pretty much every day. Trump just said the Iranian economy is going to collapse. They've been saying about China. it's this constant wish fulfillment. It never turns out to be true. But I have heard the argument that it's going to collapse, you know, at least twice a week for the last decade. They know it isn't true, but I think it's just this wish fulfillment. It's this projection. And that's what's going on here. That's a very specific thing for him to mention. That's, and I think there is a definite, undertone of their own illegitimacy here. I mean, they are, you know, we're living in unprecedented times. They have power and control without legitimacy that, you know, we can't even dream of. That has to have an effect on their psyche. And they're being challenged and they're losing. The Trump election, this just really punched them in the gut. You know, we don't have absolute control over everything, and they're seeing everything's been out of control in the their control in the foreign realm. And you're going to start seeing stuff like this. You're going to start seeing all kinds of, you know, ridiculous. I think Russiagate, just a ridiculous idea, spewing out of these people and these guys, otherwise intelligent, sounding like idiots. But that's what happens when these things are changing so fast. They have no control over them, and they're losing, and they're unsuccessful. You know, their governments are failing, and I think that's what's at the root of a lot of this.
Well, it reminds me of Amber Rudd a year or so back, and she was asking for a back door into encryption, which showed how little she actually knew about how the internet worked. But it also showed the way that they think. They want all these private companies to give them back doors into them, and then they expect they accuse China of doing the same. It suddenly dawns on them that if they're able to do this, then all the technology that they've sold to China and Japan, that the Chinese and the Japanese will be able to do this as well. It's like it suddenly dawned on them. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to give all that technology away in the first place. Well, the next country on the list here is Russia. Russia, on the other hand, is accused of aggravating social and racial tensions online, in line with similar accusations that have been leveled at Moscow since the 2016 election. Moscow may employ additional influence toolkits, such as spreading disinformation, conducting hack and leak operations, or manipulating data in a more targeted fashion to influence US policy, actions, and elections, Coates said. Though no doubt pleasing to the ears of Senator Mark Warner, the committee's ranking member and a major driver of the Russiagate narrative, Coates' testimony offered no actual evidence for Russian interference in the 2016 election. Just last month, the DNI sent a report to the White House admitting that while Russia conducted messaging campaigns on social media during the 2018 midterms, the intelligence community does not have intelligence that indicates any compromise of our nation's election infrastructure that would have prevented voting, changed vote counts, or disrupted the ability to tally votes. In the end, however, the spies painted the exact same picture of the world that they paint every year, one in which US hegemony is beset with threats from every direction and therefore requires lavish spending of taxpayer funds and unlimited spying powers. Now, I find it interesting that they mentioned Russia aggravating social and racial tensions there. Again, I think that's because there are racial tensions in the US and they're just trying to blame that on Russia. But RT does have a very liberal bent to it. And, it covers these things. It's certainly not a far right TV station. It's fairly liberal. It just gives an alternative view. What do you think of what they have to say about Russia here, Matt?
Well, you know, you're right. It's very similar to the Center for Research on Globalization. I use them as source material. I use them almost every single day. But there's a lot of real straight out Marxists on there who, at least from the point of view of foreign policy, you know, aren't all wet. But, you know, think of it from the point of view of propaganda. Even among the politically active population in America and Britain, how many people have the time or even know how to research deeply into the evidence that these intelligence agencies have, that Russia not only is interfering and manipulating elections, but, you know, shutting down power grids and everything else? You know, most people wouldn't even know how. All they really have is a headline and a general impression that they get from hearing this over and over and over again. If you were to take the average college-educated American and ask them what's going on, they'll say, yeah, apparently Russia has manipulated the election and shut down computers or whatever it is. Now, of course, that's never been the accusation. The NSA has never said that. It's just, you know, really, it's just this terrible fear that the Russian point of view, and, you know, there's one person in particular who's connected that with American nationalism. I won't mention him, going back 15 years, kind of a windbag, but a nice guy. That's, you know, connecting this with counter-revolution in this country, and in England. We're living under a revolutionary system. This is a Cheka that doesn't yet have the, confidence to start killing people yet. And in fact, I don't think they really have to. I think they'll just let us kill each other. But, you know, it's the general impression that people get, and they're pretty content with that. Just the headline. But, you know, how many people are going to be able to look into this in any detail and even have the wherewithal to analyze it in any detail? They're very, very few. So that's how this operates. The evidence isn't important. It's a general impression that they give and a panic state that they provide to the population. That's what's important to them.
Well, the intelligence agencies are all linked up with the journalists anyway, and a lot of the journalists are actually working for the CIA. So even if they haven't got evidence to show this, they can still get their journalists printing it in the newspapers and telling these lies. It's all a part of the deep state. And while that's going on, while that's what's being taught to the American people, let's have a look at how the CIA appears to the rest of the world. I got one final news story here, and this is the first time that I've actually heard about this. Maybe not surprising when you consider what it's actually talking about. The web-based network, which was used by the CIA to communicate with its sources, was overcome by Iranians using textbook Google queries, a new expose claims. The agency knew about the vulnerability but failed to act on it. Probably the biggest failure of US intelligence since 9/11 has been the compromise of the CIA's communications network, which it had used to keep in touch with agents and assets in foreign nations. The Chinese busted and executed dozens of US spies because of it. A new expose by Yahoo News says a similar upheaval happened in Iran, and that the Iranians managed to defeat the system relatively easily because it was never intended for the purpose it was used for. Around 2010, the Iranians managed to penetrate it, and many at the CIA were shocked with how simple Tehran's approach was. The Iranians identified one of the websites used for the network through a double agent, and then used Google search to find sites with similar digital fingerprints. The visitors to those sites were then tracked, leading to an unraveling of the entire CIA network. The US is not sure whether Iran and China busted the tool separately or cooperated with each other. They believe Beijing may have shared with Moscow their discoveries about how American spies operate. No similar unraveling of sources in Russia followed, however, the report says, attributing this to the CIA having kept its Russian operations walled off from the rest of the agency. The CIA could have prevented the blunder had it listened to a defense contractor named John Reedy, who had warned about the vulnerability of the system years before the Iranians mastered it. Reedy's job was to identify, contact, and manage human resources for the CIA in Iran. His complaint, however, was not heeded, while Reedy himself was punished by his superiors for the embarrassment he caused. Or at least that's what he believes. And finally, this is one of the most catastrophic intelligence failures since September the 12th. Irvin McCulloch, a national security analyst with the Government Accountability Project, told Yahoo News. And the CIA punished the person who brought the problem to light. I mean, that's
bored of it.
Talk about incompetence. Unbelievable incompetence, isn't it, Matt?
I mean, the CIA's system can't be that vulnerable that you could just do, you know, parallel Google searches. I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I think the Iranians did a tremendous job, assuming that this is a true thing at all. They're far more advanced than the U.S. wants to give them credit for. The CIA would never, after all these years, have such a simple, easy to crack way to get into their system. That's absolute nonsense. It would have been cracked 1,000 times just over the last few years alone. No, I think there's chaos there. There's chaos in the CIA, and it's showing this. This is a cover story. The thing that the CIA would have something so juvenile as their communications network is absolutely absurd. I think this is damage control. I don't believe a word of it.
So you think they're just mocking the Iranians and saying, oh yes, they did it with Google search, when it was actually much harder. It obviously cost the CIA quite a lot of spies in China. I mean, that's a serious breach, and that's the first time I heard of it. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.